what feels free.
Okay. I'm doing like a YouTube video. Hey, everybody. This is Black Guys on White Movies. I am one of the co-hosts, Amana Doomer.
I am Aaron Covington.
And I am their white friend, Brandon Gardner.
Nice. Amon with the intro, double A, Amana Doomer.
Gotta do
Brandon,
it.
Brandon Holmes and Gardner. But this week we are looking at Ferris Bueller's Day Off, 80s classic. Or is it 1986?
Yeah, 80s.
Comedy classic, Ferris Bueller Day Off, written and directed by John Hughes, starring Matthew Broderick, Alan Ruck, Mia Sara, among others. Set in Chicago, so few movies, especially then, were like set in Chicago.
Yeah. And
being from that area, the great Great Lakes area, Northwest Indiana, I love to see it. Love to see Chicago on film. And this one, I mean, Ferris Bueller is a classic film. Stood the test of time.
Do you guys remember seeing this when you were young?
Yeah, I feel like I have memories of watching pieces of this in a classroom. Like when we can't go outside because it's too cold or something.
Yeah,
so that's funny.
Or whatever, yeah. Kind of thing like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Not even pretending to pick a movie with any educational content.
Nah, not at all. It's just like sit down and watch it for 20 minutes.
And it's one about skipping school
that they right, show exactly. In school. And how lame school is.
Yeah, it inspired me to drop out. I was like, I'm done with this.
Good. Out of here.
That's my hero.
Sixth grade. Yeah. Yeah. Logline, a high school wise guy. That's how they define Ferris Bueller.
A high school
wise guy is determined to have a day off from school, despite what the principal thinks of that. That's like such a sassy log line. Despite what the principal.
Yeah, and not really accurate.
Yeah, it's not. It's missing despite what everybody thinks of that.
And it's also, it's like the guy, I mean, this is getting really picky, but he's not the principal. He's dean of students. He's not the vice. And I think it matters only because like his status is so important to him. It's such a funny, lame character who's like so self-serious, but.
What is the difference? Did your schools have that? What's a dean of students?
A dean of students, I think we had something like that. And it was basically the principal oversaw everything academically, and the dean of students, I think, would be the person you'd go to for sort of issues like that. Like if you'd been skipping school, if you'd gotten to a fight, if you had like disciplinary things would be the dean of students' job.
It was called a vice principal at my school.
Yeah, basically vice principal. I think it was like interchangeable. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep, that was definitely the vice principal. Oh, dean of students. So it's a step below the major.
The principal.
Yeah.
Okay. Makes it funnier.
So basically the dean of students is a cop.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In mentality, it's like, hey, finger wagging. Let me see your slip, your permission slip, your hall pass.
Yeah, you could see it being what the character is, which is someone who's very focused on their own power and like winning, like very adversarial against students.
What are your general thoughts, the broad thoughts of the about this movie, feelings, remembrances, nostalgia, etc.?
Do you guys want to start? So I'm curious, yeah, was this movie, like, I'd say it's a white movie, like definitely aimed at the mainstream, but like a white movie. Was this one that you felt was pretty like accessible, or like didn't the fact that there's not really any main black characters or really any speaking roles for black characters ever?
I didn't really get into Ferris Bueller when I was younger. In fact, it didn't really have an impact on me until I remember Shaquille O'Neal was like, Ferris Bueller is my favorite movie. In some interview at some point in his career.
Oh, wow.
I was like, oh, really? Like, Shaq likes Ferris Bueller? That didn't necessarily make me watch it. I've seen the whole thing maybe twice before watching it for this podcast. And you know, it, for me, just knowing how popular it was is why I watched it. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to see what people are talking about to get the inside jokes. But it was honestly never a favorite of mine. To me, Ferris Bueller's Day Off is not, I can't say it's a movie I like. Do I like it? I don't know. I don't dislike it. And I came up with this analogy in the car today. It reminds me of lo-fi music. There's this whole thing now more than ever. Like if you go on YouTube and type in lo-fi or lo-fi summer chill, and it's kind of like this background music. I don't know if I like this music per se. Like I don't know any of the songs or the artists. Or anything specific about it. But if I play it for a while, especially while working, I get into an enjoyment groove. Like I enjoy the space that it puts me in. Mm-hmm. I would say for Ferris Bueller, once I get kind of past the privilege of it a little bit and you're watching it at some point, you're just enjoying the antics. And that's how I feel. It's like, oh, they're at the Von Steuben parade. Oh man, the car. Cameron really carries it emotionally. And then at some point it's just crack a little smile, like, okay, you know, you kind of won me over, just like I guess his character would do over time. It's just by the end of it, I'm like, what's the song in the movie where it's dun dun dun? That's how
I feel
about the movie.
I think this, I 100% agree. I'm on the same page. It feels like a, it just take me back to being in like a nice car in the summer with the air conditioning on, where it's like, this is just a nice escape from the heat for a little bit, but it wasn't necessarily relatable in any way. It was just like, oh, this is what a fun dream and an escape for me because all my parents' cars never had AC. So I'm like, oh, I'm in my family, in my friend who's giving me a ride home. I'm get to enjoy this, but I got to go to reality. And it's so unrelatable to me to think about escaping school.
Air conditioning is like the escape part for you. Breeze, Oh man, the wealth.
Oh, this is nice. This is nice. Yeah, 100%.
This is a movie I think I probably first saw with older cousins. Like they rented it from the video store and probably Yeah.
Super interesting because you mentioned before on this podcast how you kind of grew up with like these comedies from the 70s.
From my parents, like older comedies from your parents, watching comedies with my parents,
So I wonder, does that affect this? Was there a bias against newer comedies? You're like, this isn't. This isn't Steve Martin.
I sort of knew that there's definitely movies that I had seen with my parents' comedies that I sort of just knew, oh, none of my friends have seen Woody Allen's Love and Death or Bananas or The Man with Two Brains. They were just movies that I knew no one else knew those movies except old people. But like this kind of movie, because it came out in 86, so I would have been like four. Definitely didn't see it when it came out. I probably saw it for the first time when I was around eight with older cousins. Didn't completely appreciate it. And then I think like this movie's sweet spot, I think you're like 12. Like I think when you're like 12 or 13, you're not in high school yet. So you don't know in what ways it's not accurate for high school.
Right.
And it's just this fantasy of this person where everything comes easily to them and they're super confident and everything goes well. So when I was like a young teen, really liked this movie. I don't know. We must have rented it or it would be on television. Definitely loved it for like early teen years. And it's interesting. I was wondering like the privilege part of it, you sort of don't even realize it. Like you sort of know, oh, I don't, and I don't know anyone who lives in these houses that these characters live in, but it also never bothered me. I was just like, oh, it's a movie. And, it's interesting when did either of you see the movie Love, Simon? It's like a couple years, maybe 3 or 4 years old.
No.
That movie, it's like a teen comedy. I would say almost romantic comedy, but the revolutionary thing, I guess, is that the main character is gay and is in love with someone, another guy at school.
Right.
And I remember thinking like that character, the Simon character, is this like affluent white kid and he's got like a very sort of perfect family. Mm-hmm. And I remember being like, that's kind of, there's a lot of this movie that to me, like, feels like very boring. Like, they almost needed to make his life perfect in every other way. Like, so that his real only struggle was that he wasn't out. And it was almost like they're like, let's not add anything else that's interesting to him, almost.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
Interesting.
But I remember thinking, it's like, I didn't really, you know, like, for whatever reason, that character sort of beautiful home and everything bumped for me. And I was like, well, I never thought about that about Ferris Bueller. I wonder why. Because he, same kind of houses and same kind of like life. Except he didn't have that conflict even of being gay. Really has no conflict. Just like a perfect life. And that's actually, get into it. You were saying like Cameron has all the emotional stuff. Someone pointed this out to me, I don't know, probably 5 years ago, that dramatically Cameron is the protagonist of the movie. Yeah. Like, he's the character that changes. He's the character who has a problem, goes on an adventure sort of begrudgingly, and by the end is a different person than how he started. Yeah. Ferris has no change at all.
No.
Yeah, zero.
Completely gets away with it. Total cake eater. Like, you know what I mean? Quick aside, Black movie recommendation of the week. I'm going with the 1990 classic, which was really ahead of its time as a franchise, House Party.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
Starring rap group Kid and Play. Robin Harris, Martin Lawrence was in it, Tisha Campbell. Great cast, great Black cast, great Black music. Directed and written by Reginald Hudlin. Still works in the industry, like, it's truly a legend in Black cinema and Black entertainment. Spawned 2 sequels, and they also made a movie called Class Act.
I remember that.
Which was kind of just to play on the same thing. They just weren't friends at the beginning of it, you know? So yeah, if you haven't seen House Party, they're doing a remake. Out of Donald Glover's camp, I believe. Stephen Glover, I believe, is writing it. And I think it's maybe coming out this year. I don't know. Hopefully soon. We all want to see that. But House Party, it's a similar where it's like kids doing something they shouldn't be doing, but it's not really that bad. They're just throwing a house party because somebody's parents are out of town or whatever. And it's hijinks and mischief and pranks. You know, they actually have way more conflict in House Party compared to Ferris Bueller. Mm-hmm. But like, in place of the principal, there's like these neighborhood bullies. But it being a Black movie and it's like a middle class, lower middle class neighborhood, they're also not like drug dealer bullies. They're just kind of big jerks.
Mm-hmm.
So the threat isn't like the cops are coming or if you don't give them their money, they're going to do this. It's just like they want to be at the party and they want to be cool. Martin Lawrence is funny. It's kind of like, I don't know if it's his debut, but it's definitely pre-Martin show and early stuff. I love House Party movies. John Witherspoon's in them. Clifton Powell. George Clinton is a DJ. Like, they got George Clinton in the movie.
Oh, wow.
Fully worth checking out, House Party and the following sequels, just for fun. A similar kind of fun of Ferris Bueller.
Right.
You know? And a lot of dancing.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
The best dance sequences in movie history literally are in House Party. Mm-hmm. So that's my House Party rant.
This is true. A full on Black confession here. I've never seen House Party, but I've definitely seen clips of the dancing and seen how it's inspired so many other people. Is Martin Lawrence in House Party playing someone the kid's age or like an older parent type person?
Martin Lawrence is a kid at this time.
Yeah, he's really young.
He's like 20 years old.
Oh, good, good, good. Okay, I just wanted to make sure. Okay. Cool, cool, cool.
Yeah, yeah. He's like,
I'm trying to think
24 or something.
How and he's I just saw like, it.
He's just like the DJ or something. And he's like, come on, we got to have a party. What y'all doing? And they're like, chill, man, chill. He's like, no. He just has
I think this movie was on TV. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I definitely saw it multiple times as a kid. Yeah.
Yeah, you should just replay on Comedy Central. Ferris Bueller, too. That's why I saw it.
Yeah.
Like TNT or something.
So one thing that I found interesting, I was telling you, I both before we started recording, I probably have like more information research on this one because I just happen to keep reading these things sort of related to the movie. And I can't remember if this was something that John Hughes said in an interview. I think it was something that the editor, Paul Hirsch, said, pointed out, but I was like, oh, wow. Is Ferris Bueller is like in so many ways like a little kid, and it's sort of how Matthew Broderick played him. In some ways, in like a very obvious way, where he's interacting with his kid and he's acting like a toddler. He's like babbling almost. He's like, I'm sick. And he's like, oh, and he's like sort of charming them. But even like the things he does, like he's in the shower and he like spikes up his hair and he's like singing into the fire. Like they're things you really do when you're much younger than like 17. But it's like part of the charm of the character is his childishness. And he's both has like, sometimes he will be sort of sophisticated and matured in a certain way, but he also has like a childlike playfulness throughout the whole thing. Yeah.
Yeah. He's definitely a big kid.
Yeah.
Speaks to something about arrested development for sure.
Yeah.
And what is allowed, right? Like Ferris doesn't have to grow up. There is nothing in his life that says you got to like be mature. You have to be responsible.
Mm-hmm.
And there's nothing about his future that says he's ever going to have to.
Yeah. Cameron essentially says things will always go well for him.
Things always go well
for him. And you believe that, yeah.
Barbara Bush. Okay, so this is on the Wikipedia, but I remember things like this at the time. On the Wikipedia, on the cultural impact. John Hughes said, this kid will either become president of the United States or go to prison. Took an assessment of Ferris Bueller. This film actually had a huge kind of cultural impact. I wonder why. Just because of the fun of it, I guess, or maybe Matthew Broderick just kind of like was that peak.
Definitely charisma? Star-making role for Matthew Broderick.
Yeah, for sure. This is the whole time I was watching this movie, I thought if this was made in the 2000s, or you know, if this was made, there's so many directions that I noticed this was a template movie for all the movies that came later on, but the movies that came later on about like high school kids and things always have like some kind of point. It's like, oh, they're going to grow up at the end of this one. They're going to get mature. They're going to go off to college, different colleges. And that's about the friendship's last opportunity to do X, Y, Z. This movie was kind of nice in that it wasn't about that. It didn't feel like an end to anything. Yeah. It was just like, this is just a day.
One thing John Hughes said, which is that he considered this movie a companion piece to 16 Candles, which he'd already made, which was a big success. And he said that 16 Candles, the idea is that it's the worst day in a teenager's life. And he wanted to make a movie that was the best day in a teenager's life. Mm. And that's fair. And it sort of is. It's just like this perfect day.
Yeah. And when that like parade is, so this movie must be set in like September. So it's not even
September, the October. Yeah. It doesn't really make sense. The
school year. He just like, man, school just started about a month ago. I'm out. Or he's been out. He has like a bunch of truancies his parents don't know about.
That's right. Nine. He had nine absences.
You know.
I want to say this movie is definitely shot in September, October when that parade is. But they say other things that it makes it seem like it's set in like May.
Yeah, like it's the end of the school year.
Yeah. So I think they sort of cheat that. One really funny thing, it's like such a small detail, but the when they cut to class and the teacher who's played by Ben Stein is reading people's names. In that particular classroom, he reads like eight different names that start with A. He's going alphabetically before he gets to Bueller.
I thought about this too.
It's this A name. He finally gets to Bueller. And then the very next name he gets to is Fry, which is French. Right. So there's like eight A names, one B, and then it jumps to F.
Like what was the that was the joke there, just like A, Aaron Aronson, Ashley Adamson, and it's like Ferris Bueller, B-U.
Right.
And then like it's Jonas so Fry. It's like what weird town is it? All the A's moved into this part of Chicago. So funny. I love another, go ahead. Cause I know you got a lot of like,
oh man, I got a ton. So I'll skip through some of it, but I was just going to say how Broderick and Ruck got in this is Matthew Broderick was cast first as Ferris, and he had been doing Biloxi Blues on Broadway with Alan Ruck for like a year, and they were really good friends. Mm. And so Ferris Bueller was like, you should audition for this part, Cameron, of my character's friend. And he's like, I'm going to do it. I'm 20. He was like 28 or 29. He's like, just come audition. And their chemistry was so good, like being friends, that he got cast. But he was like 29.
I love that.
When he made it. And there's like related to that, when he's doing like the Mr. Peterson voice, when he's supposed to be Sloane's dad.
Yeah.
He's like, Rooney, get over it. Like, that was an impression he was doing of a director, a Broadway director that he and Matthew Broderick both knew. And he was just sort of making fun of him. And John Hughes heard that voice and he was like, do that voice for this part.
Oh, that's nice. It worked. Totally worked.
I think a good way to approach this movie is let's talk about some of the characters kind of one by one.
Great.
Because they're so, I don't know, this just kind of works better for this movie. We talked about Ferris a bit, not only childlike, but a narcissist. Ferris is not worried about anybody else. Mm-hmm. Even when he feigns concern for Cameron, it feels like it's just for his benefit.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, right, what about this car? It's like, man, you're going to take that car? That's the most selfish thing you could do besides being Cameron's dad's car.
Yeah. He's not
like,
really a nice person.
He's not really a nice guy.
Mm-hmm. No.
And if he made this
and it's funny that it doesn't matter.
He would get such a comeuppance.
At the end, he made it. That's so true.
If he made this now, like he would have to have this dark night moment where a dark night of the soul moment where it was just like, you're a jerk, Fair. Everybody hates you. Like the end of Seinfeld.
Only think of yourself. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thought you were a nice guy, but now you're in jail and forever because you're everybody you touched, you ruined.
Well, it's funny that like you still like him, or at least I do. Like I watch it and I still like him, knowing he's so selfish. It doesn't bother me. Like it says something interesting.
That's so true. And it's so realistic too, because I knew people like him growing up and in school, and people didn't just like ostracize that person. They were the cool person that everyone wanted to hang out with. So it's like, oh yeah, I totally know this person.
I mean, America loves a rebel. Maybe humanity does. Maybe that crosses cultures, but humanity definitely loves a rebel in many different forms. And kind of, and America also loves somebody that, you know, doesn't give a fuck. You know what I mean? That kind of prevailing attitude.
Right. Those are the things that people are too scared to do.
Yeah. We love somebody that can just coast through and like with this ease and nonchalance. And in this movie, Ferris isn't, he doesn't do anything to purposely. Like he's not plotting or manipulative. Right. I mean, he's manipulative, but he's not like stepping over people like a homeless guy on the ground or something. He takes advantage, but it's really in the name of having more fun. I think you can spin his treatment of Cameron as like, you're so uptight.
Right.
This will help you be less uptight.
I'm going to shake you loose. Yeah.
And while he's taking advantage of him, like he's singing for him at the parade. You know, it's really...
Yeah.
Girlfriend, we'll get to her just quickly next. She's almost inconsequential.
Truly.
It's really about their friendship. Matthew and Alan Ruck, Cameron and Ferris.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%. And you're right that he doesn't do anything that's obviously negative that makes us hate him or anything. But he's for sure a sociopath. And
I don't want to meet post-college Ferris.
I don't want to meet Ferris in college because I know he's the head of a fraternity and he's putting a fire poker somewhere into like freshmen, new freshmen, just like getting in trouble for all the crazy things he's doing.
He's definitely handing out too many red cups and like, hey, have another drink and then we'll go back tomorrow. You know, I don't know.
100%. I'm like, he's not marrying that girl. He is not. He's like, he said it, but he's not waiting. Ferris said that to me. He told me he was going to marry me.
Before we get to the friend, I want to talk about Dina's students, Ed Rooney.
Yes.
Ed Rooney is funny. This is a funny character.
Great part. Apparently he got cast. He plays a prince in Amadeus, the Mozart movie. This like sort of stupid print. And John Hughes saw him in that and is like, oh, that's essentially the same character I want. The sort of pompous idiot. You'll be perfect.
Oh, that's great.
I can't wait to see who you guys cast in that role.
Oh, I'm excited.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What was that? Because everybody's going to think that was gas.
Was that in your environment? Am I? Was that at the car? Truck?
Yeah, it was. I'm assuming like a motorcycle that just took off down the street. Gotcha. Yeah.
Ed Rooney, so obsessed with Ferris and like disciplining him. There's definitely a metaphor there for the ages. Mm-hmm. Where it's like, you could just go on about your day, man. You don't have to hunt this down. He goes to the kid's house, clearly overstepping his bounds.
Oh God, yeah.
Totally.
You know, and then breaks into the house. And I was like, what are you doing? They have to
even though like leaving school grounds in the first place is like, that's not something you need to do. Yeah. You don't need to track down an individual kid.
I mean, can you imagine? Mm-hmm. Word would get around the school, like the disciplinarian left.
Yeah.
We could do anything.
Yeah. That's another reason it was unrelatable. Cause I was like, the disciplinarian at my high school would have to stay at the school. Otherwise it would just go. My school is like filled with Ferris Buellers essentially. So it was like, they can't take care of one. There's just so much stuff happening.
Yeah.
His relationship with Grace, his secretary, is also great. She's really good. Oh, she's in a ton of those movies and she's so funny.
Yeah.
And
she's so funny.
She is like the one person who respects him.
Right.
So he likes that part of it, but she's also sort of an idiot and misses a lot, and which frustrates him.
They definitely mind that relationship for the show AP Bio, if you've seen that.
I haven't.
Patton Oswalt is kind of like, I think he's the principal or dean of students, that role. And he definitely has a secretary that's super devoted to him and kind of clueless.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny. It's a funny dynamic.
And she likes the students, it seems like, and like knows a lot about them. And he clearly hates all of them.
Hates them all.
Yeah.
Which is a dangerous personality trait or attitude for a disciplinarian.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what we see, you know, with cops now. Cops hate criminals to the point that they, you know, we can get all the race stuff and how they feel about Black people, brown people, and immigrants. And then you see how they act in regards to that. If you hate the people, you're going to be worse to them.
It's like not even just that they hate criminals, but there's people who just hate people. And this is
Let's talk about the sister, Jennifer Grey.
Yeah, because I was just going to say, that's one of the things I think is cool about the movie structurally is there's two antagonists. It's his sister and it's Rooney are both going after Ferris.
I really like her in the movie. And okay, so this brother-sister dynamic is so... it is cultural, but also across cultures.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, in humanity, just the son, especially a firstborn son, can be treated, you know, so well or so pampered and can't do any wrong. But, you know, in a way where he's bound to disappoint as an adult because he's not given challenges as a kid, where the sister is like just kind of put upon, never good enough, never pretty, thin enough. You know, I've watched the show Rami. This is the Hulu show, and it's a Muslim family, and he's definitely like skirts by. They do whole episodes where it's like, look at what the sister has to go through. Everybody is down on her, constantly criticized, and Rami is just like, hey, I'm going to get a Pop-Tart and go date some white girls. And the parents are like, good job.
Right.
You know, and with her, they turn to her immediately and go, why are you not married? Why are you not kids? And she's like, I just started college, you know?
Right. Yes.
So that's something that crosses cultural boundaries for sure. And it's interesting the way it's presented here because the parents are so clueless. You got to love the 80s, 90s clueless parents in movies.
Fun fact with those ones, they started dating during the shoot, the actors playing the parents, and got married.
Whoa.
Wow.
Man.
Shout out to Scream. This is the second movie we've done where the actors fell in love.
Yeah. And I think, and I'm pretty sure Matthew Broderick and Jennifer Grey, who plays his sister, were also dating, at least when this was shooting.
Wow. Shout out to Jennifer Grey, who would do Dirty Dancing.
Dirty Dancing, yeah.
Dirty Dancing.
Yeah. Wow.
One of those like landmark roles. Like, that's huge.
Yeah. These are, I guess, are like her. She's done a bunch of big movies, but these maybe are the first ones I think of with her.
Yeah. And these two are so large culturally and
huge culturally. Yeah. Her scene, I love her scene with Charlie Sheen in the police station.
Boy, Charlie Sheen just coming in.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, that was a one day shoot. Yeah.
This is like a Kendrick or Kanye, right. Eminem, like, who you got on your track? I got Eminem. And everybody's like, he's going to rip it. He's going to rip it apart.
Yeah, this Minaj, is one of those ones.
Like, this is a great guest feature.
Charlie Sheen went crazy, but you see the talent here where you're like, oh, yeah, he nailed this.
100%. Apparently
he stayed up for a few days to get that like weird, sick, like sort of like drug addict kind of look to him.
Was this before or after? This must have been before Major League. Because I feel like that
way before. Like, this was before he was, people just knew him as one of Martin Sheen's kids.
This was the same character as Rick Wildling Vaughn, right? When I saw him, I was like, he's going to go pitch for the Indians.
Was Platoon?
Platoon was another one of the early ones, but I don't know if it'd come out yet.
Yeah, I think
I don't think he'd had a starring role before this.
But after this, oh wow. Platoon is like the same year, maybe later in the year. Then Wall Street, which was a huge hit. Mm-hmm. And Young Guns, Rookie, Major League, Three Musketeers. He was off and running.
But I also love like that, going back to the Jennifer Grey character and the sort of universality of you have the sibling who can do nothing wrong. Also sort of his message of like, why are you focused on people whose life is going better than yours or whatever? It's like, why does that have to bother you? It's like, you're mad he's quitting school, you quit school. Are you like skipping school? You skip school. Like, why does it matter that someone else is having a good day?
When you're talking to the sister.
Yeah. And she's like, oh yeah. It's sort of, and he's like the first person to sort of get through to her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She was obsessing for sure and could have just been having her own day.
And it came at the perfect time where you do wonder, like, because they showed us nothing about their relationship. So you do wonder, like, why is she so annoyed other than being an older sister who doesn't get away with the stuff?
I think that's enough.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even her clueless parents, they weren't clueless with her. They were like, what are you doing? You know, they're
so angry. Yeah.
Yeah. But then the mom goes to the police station to pick her up. And was she making out with Charlie Sheen at that point?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Hardcore. By the end of it.
Yeah. That's how, and the parent didn't mention anything. That's how clueless that parent was. Just a little, I love a movie parent trying to get a kid doing something wrong's attention, the little cough. I love it. So unrealistic. I think my mom or dad would grab me by the ear.
Just grab you. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. And just yank me.
Or like a louder,
so
like,
polite.
Excuse me?
Yeah.
What are you doing? You know, something.
Yeah.
That's not like, oh, my kid is just doing their thing and it's time to go if you are ready to go. It's more like, what? Get your butt up so we can do, you know you're doing wrong. and now Cameron Fry, Ferris's best friend, and Sloane Peterson, his girlfriend, who his parents have never met.
Do we know that they've never met her?
Well, they are next to his dad's car.
Oh, that's right. I guess she's wearing sunglasses, but yeah, that's it.
Yeah, the Superman disguise.
Yeah.
Come on, Dad, you know who that is. And he's like, well, she's definitely messing with him. I like how they played it where he wasn't like, hey, I'm going to get this young hot thing. He was like,
yeah, it'd be too gross. Yeah.
By it.
Yeah. That was great.
But Cameron is super interesting in this movie. Such a weird dude.
This was apparently John Hughes wrote that character based on this friend he had in school who similarly had like sort of loveless parents who were completely unsympathetic to him. And he described his friend, he's like, the only time his friend was ever happy was when he was sick because it gave like people a reason to be sympathetic to him.
Otherwise,
he was like manufacturing reasons to be for people to be sympathetic, but he was always like that person who never had any fun, was always like worrying about the worst possible things. And so it's almost like he wrote this movie for that friend to have changed in a way that I don't think that friend in real life ever changed.
I really felt for Cameron because of that. Mm-hmm. And that's really the hook. I mean, you can just imagine a kid whose parents are super strict, but also absent.
Right? Yeah, cold, it sounds like. Cold, yeah. Like they describe his house as a museum.
Caring more about, caring more about their things and their presentation than they do him. Mm-hmm. If this had been like a Black movie made in the same time, mm-hmm. he would have been flirting with gang life. Mm-hmm. Instead of playing sick, he would have been like, I found attachment mm-hmm. on the corner.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Interesting. Yeah.
Definitely felt for him. You want to see him stand up for himself. But that car getting totaled, whew, that was a lot.
Oh.
That was a lot.
That beautiful car.
Oh my goodness.
I'm not that into cars. That car I do think is beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like not someone who's a car guy, but I'm like, wow, that is very nice.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was almost like, ooh, that's too far. Ooh. Ooh, and it fell through the window.
Oh my God. That was something too. Apparently that stunt did not go the way they thought. And it shot so much further out the garage. Mm-hmm. And it really literally was only stopped by, you see it in the movie, there's like a chain link fence that sort of runs up against and gets stuck.
Yeah.
But that was like way further back than they wanted it to stop.
Oh, wow. Wow. What did they must have? Yeah. Right.
You got to use what you got on film.
You got little gift from the film guy.
Shoots out. Yeah.
Yeah.
They made like a ton of like replicas and things because they're not going to send the actual Ferrari out the window. Yeah.
Right. Right. Mm-hmm. That's interesting.
Mm-hmm. I don't remember the one joke I do remember from that movie prior to watching it again for this was the joke that Ferris makes after the car goes through the thing. And he's like, because I thought it was so funny and so realistic to, I don't know, maybe an experience I had, but he just goes, hey man, I'll just tell your dad I did it. He hits me anyways.
Yeah, he hits me anyways. Yeah.
I was like, that's such a funny line.
That's like the nicest moment of him too. That's the first time where you're like, oh, maybe he genuinely is going to take one for Cameron this time. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you still feel like he knows there's no real punishment he's going to suffer from this.
Right.
No. So
he's like, I'll take the blame because it's going to roll off me. Like, you know, I'm Teflon.
Yeah.
Why would I be worried anyway? That's how it feels with him saying it.
Oh, truly. Because he gets to go back home and Cameron has to stay with that dad who's probably going to blame
what
him.
What are Ferris's parents going to do? Nothing. Defend him, you know?
Yeah. Probably his parents will pay for the damage.
They'll just pay it.
Yeah, that's true.
And then the girlfriend, I definitely feel like in early in the movie, she's going to play a more part or they're going to like mm-hmm. break up and get back together. But she's just pretty even through the whole thing. She's mm-hmm. a co-conspirator. She kind of talks Cameron down a couple times, but.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Kind of flat.
The one part that I finally thought like, okay, there's something here that I wish they could have taken advantage of was when she was relating with Cameron about not knowing what to do in her future.
Yeah.
I was like, that's realistic and true, especially for that age, especially for any age. I would love to like delve into that, see what her deal is.
Yeah, that was a good scene for like where Ferris is on the parade float and they're both outside of it being like, yeah, mm-hmm. life is not like that for regular people. Even right. even for Sloane, who's just like very pretty, like it seems like also a affluent young person.
Yeah.
He's still like, yeah, things don't happen like that.
The thing about the wealth in this movie and makes me think of the other 90s movies we did, Sleepless in Seattle and Scream, is the wealth is presented as middle class.
Right, exactly.
It's presented as like, this is the normal, just how, this is how people live.
Mm-hmm. Average live kids. Like
this?
Yep.
Yeah. not even an aspirational wealth, really. It's just like, yeah, big old house, two stories.
Yeah, your dad has a Ferrari.
Yeah.
Ferris's biggest problem is that he doesn't have a car, you know?
Mm-hmm. He wasn't given a car when he turned 16, but his sister was.
Yeah. and he's like pissed about it.
Yeah.
But nobody ever was like, well, we told you to get a job and work for it. It's just like, you got so much other stuff. You'll get one. Mm-hmm. He's got like a recording studio. I mean, so much equipment and stuff in his room.
Back when it probably really cost a lot of money.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
They were like, you didn't get a car. You got, the
computer.
The computer. Yeah. When computers weren't, I mean, computers are still expensive.
Like thousands of dollars. Yeah.
Those were expensive. Yeah. Yeah. The fact that he could hack into his school's computer using his computer tells me that not many people had computers. Like, it must have been easy for him.
He did that from home?
Oh, yeah.
How was that possible?
It's impossible.
Was there internet back
then? Yeah, I'm sure their computer was not hooked up to the internet. It doesn't make it doesn't matter.
Was it dial-up modem? What? It totally changed his absences from home. It was like a 1999 Matrix, or
that's what I was thinking. The green and black. I was like, he's getting into the Matrix here.
It was like this. Remember that movie Sneakers, where they were like hackers? Mm-hmm. It was like the first hacker movie.
Oh yeah,
for Robert Redford. That was Ferris Bueller in '86. I didn't even think about how unbelievable that part of it was.
Truly,
he would at least had to have been in school to do it.
He had to, to be with a computer from that
system.
In reality,
yes. Yes, unless he had a long extension cord that just kind of went from his school out a window to the house. Yeah.
But there were black people in this movie. As soon as it gets funky and they start playing music at the parade, all of a sudden a chorus line of black people start dancing out of the...
Like a local dance group in Chicago that they found.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
That's cool.
Also, the construction worker, that was real. So they were playing the music and then they just saw a construction worker dancing like up on the high rise in LA, and they just flipped up and got him. But he's not an extra. He's just a real construction worker who was dancing.
What? Oh, wow.
There's definitely something about shooting on location in cities that aren't LA and New York. And sometimes you do get this in New York because it's so just close-knit and people are going to do their own thing. Where you get random stuff like that, and where you put a local family dance troupe in the movie because everybody in Chicago kind of knows them somehow. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you got to get the Smith family to dance in this movie. Mm-hmm. It's like, I know it's not in the script and it doesn't fit, but I'm going to find a way to make it fit. Even Blues Brothers had so many like local Chicago things in it, because when you're shooting at home and you're not New York, or LA, you put something local in the movie as much as you can.
Right. Yep. And people show up for it.
People are going to show up. It's exciting.
New. Yep.
It's exciting. Yeah. But The Privilege and Ferris, it's almost like this movie and talking about it, it's just like, it's so on the nose that it's hard to like feel like it's worth digging into it too much.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, man, this is Ferris Bueller. You know, I almost personally feel like I give it a bit of a pass. It may be I shouldn't. I mean, I still recognize the privilege and like, yeah, this is not the average life that these kids live. This isn't average. This is how some people live. Yeah, in the suburbs that go to these real nice schools and things.
Mm-hmm.
And even the school, I mean, I find it funnier now when all the other students are like, yeah, we're raising money for Ferris. You know, everybody knows him and everybody's like, oh, poor guy. We got to make sure he's okay.
Mm-hmm.
I definitely recognize that more as the comedic device that it is now, where it's just like everywhere you turn to antagonize the principal.
Or the sister,
And the sister, we have to keep making Ferris's myth around him larger and larger.
Yeah, they got a real town. Sheen
is like,
They got a real town to put Save Ferris on their water tower. And it was on their water tower for years.
Oh, that's cute. That's nice. That would be like a site to go see nowadays if it were still up.
Yeah, I don't think it's still up, but for like a long time it was. And it was like what the town was known for, is like having the Save Ferris water tower.
Yeah. That's why it's good to go do things in those kind of towns, because they'll hold on to it forever.
Yeah, they're just excited to be part of something. Yeah.
Northbrook, Illinois.
Do you guys want to hear about a scene that was cut from this movie?
Yeah.
With all my heart.
So apparently a bunch of scenes were cut, but one of the scenes that was cut was that they really liked was the Ferris character sort of talked his way into being on the radio, and suddenly he was being interviewed by a DJ, and he was telling the DJ that he was going to be the first high school student sent into space. And he was like making up this whole thing. Yeah. It was sort of like a similar vibe to the parade where Cameron and Sloan are like, what are you doing? You're like making up this elaborate lie and getting on the radio. But then as they were editing the movie, the Challenger explosion happened and they're like, cut anything about space. And so they cut the whole radio thing and took it out.
Mm. Oh.
And we didn't get a DVD special features because this was before, you know, they could have been a deleted scene.
That reminds me, it's like, because we had 2 weeks to watch this movie, I watched it once and then I watched it with director's commentary. So a lot of this info is coming from that, which is pretty nice. Pretty good.
Oh, John Hughes does the commentary?
Yeah, John Hughes does the commentary.
Oh, man.
That's worth a listen.
Mm-hmm.
They did attempt a Ferris Bueller TV show.
Oh, wow.
It was canceled within its first season a few months after its debut. So it was not...
I mean,
yeah, what is it going to be like?
Try recasting, Ferris Bueller. That's tough.
Was the main cast involved, or was it...
No, it was all new people. John Hughes wasn't involved.
Yeah, that seems right.
I think it came on the same time it says as Parker Lewis Can't Lose. Do you remember that show?
Mm-mm.
Oh, man, Parker Lewis. I remember vaguely that show. I definitely remember the title. But it was kind of the same where a carefree like kid in high school. It seemed like that one just won. That one did 3 seasons.
Gotcha.
And Ferris just didn't last. I think you could pull off a Ferris Bueller TV show now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like a single camera.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Yeah. I mean, when you're talking about House Party, I think there's a little bit of, like in Fresh Prince, there's a little bit of Ferris Bueller.
100%. Fresh Prince is
that's like sort of Ferris the TV Bueller. Show. Wow. Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely. Yeah.
That's kind of blowing my mind right now.
Got it.
Nailed it. Which also plays into my casting.
Oh, good. I'm excited. Getting
the casting now?
Let me just say a couple fun facts before we go, because I got so much information.
Yeah.
One thing that I think is a fun, the scene at the end where Rooney gets on the bus and he's like, he's been humiliated and he's like dragging himself.
This is the best closing credit sequence of all time. Go ahead.
Well, originally they had just cut it out of the movie because that they shot it to be sort of in the middle of like the scene after Ferris and his sister sort of get by Rooney, but before he has the last bit with his parents.
Mm-hmm.
And it sort of just didn't work there. And it was the editor's idea to be like, why don't we put this over the credits? And it works great. It's like a perfect credits.
Really?
Thing. And it also, they knew they wanted to end with that tag of Ferris being like, what are you doing here?
Yeah.
But it felt weird having it earlier because it was like right after another part. Uh-huh. So they're like, how do we have it come at the end and get people to stay through the credits?
Yeah.
So the editor was talking about when people were first seeing this in the theater, credits start. So people are like standing up, starting to walk out. And then you see, oh, something's happening. And some people leave, some people stay. And then other people are like coming back in from the lobby because they're like, wait, something's still happening. Right. But they didn't used to do that. They didn't used to do those like credit scenes. And it's a great one.
Yeah.
So good.
Innovation.
Mm-hmm. You're one of those great, like trying to solve a problem and you end up creating this cool new thing.
It's so great because it's not an allusion to something else. It just ends the principal story.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, yeah, after all that, that was dumb to do, all the things you did this day. So you have this humiliation where you're hurt, beaten up. You got to get on a school bus out of pity.
Yep.
You got to sit next to the dork on the bus, which I definitely got Forrest Gump vibes from there. I expected them to be like, can't sit here.
Can't sit here.
Seat's taken. This was, of course,
And there's like very little dialogue. So it works great with like the music.
So
to
good.
Just like watch the humiliation of him going down the bus aisle.
Yeah.
Last thing I'll say, just because I think this is one of those things when I hear people doing this, I always think it's sort of amazing and cool, is I guess when they were they'd finished the edit, but they're doing the sound mixing. John Hughes had sort of gotten bored and hadn't shown up for one. And the editor was like, "What are you doing?" And he's like, and he came in the next day and had written the first 60 pages of Trains, Planes, and Automobiles. And he's just like, "I just had this idea." And he stayed up all night and wrote this other classic comedy of the 80s. And he just could do that. He was just like someone who, like,
sometimes when you're in your bag, you're just in your bag.
Yeah. You
know? Right. It's like
Jordan won 6 straight, basically, you know?
LeBron
went to 10 straight finals or whatever it is. Sometimes you're just in it and you wake up.
It's just pouring out of it. Yeah.
And you look at a lot of artists and across different mediums. In the actual art world, that's why they have different periods. They talk about this is the blue period. This is, you know, this phase is. Mm-hmm. But in music too, people usually have like a nice 3-album, 5-album run that's like, whoa, that's when you become a legend. And in movies too, it's like, You look at somebody's IMDb, and even if it's somebody like, let's take a Scorsese, who has such a long career, but you definitely have your favorite pocket. It's like, oh, 80 Scorsese is my Scorsese. Those 4 or 5 movies define something. Or
Casino, Goodfellas,
Right. Raging Bull, you know, Raging Bull, like that. Right, or, you know, so it's not surprising, but super impressive. John Hughes, definitely a legend of the game.
Yeah, truly, truly. It's like defined an era of comedy.
Yeah, it was just plugged in at that time and just.
Yeah, super deliver. Plugged in specifically with like teens. Like he knew how teenagers talked, what was important to them, the kind of music they listened to.
That different from our guy from the Scream movies, who wrote Scream and Dawson's Creek. And
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that was his genre almost, was like teens.
He was just locked in.
Truly.
2 teens, which sounds bad, but I don't think it was that bad for either of these guys. They just
think it was, not great.
Truly.
Lived out their teenage years, you know, in their writing.
Yeah, they remembered things. Mm-hmm. So those characters are much more, as you mentioned, Brandon, his characters being inspired by friends he knew or people he knew, they're much more human.
Like tying it back to the Love, Simon stuff. There's like weird parts to Ferris Bueller that I think is part of what's good, is it doesn't feel like a studio told him who Ferris Bueller is supposed to be, where it's like, this is what cool is. We researched it.
Yeah.
Like there's a lot of weird things Ferris Bueller does. Like like the part where he's like playing the clarinet or something, he's just like goofing around in his room and he's horrible. Right. And he's like, never had one lesson. It's just like weird play in the middle of these things. It's like, who is this guy?
Yeah. And the breaking the fourth wall, I think, is worth mentioning too.
Oh yeah. That's
that's right. Yeah.
The very first time he breaks the fourth wall was like towards the end of shooting. Mm-hmm. And he knew he wanted to put it there because he's like, I need him to have the character fully in his bones by the first time we present this.
Yeah.
So like the first day of shooting was like the scene where Cameron's having like a breakdown. Sort of, because he's like, that's an awkward period anyway. So if the actors are sort of like feeling a little weird being on set and getting into it, it'll feel okay for the scene.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. The moments where we need Ferris to be like fully confident and like fully comfortable talking to camera, which is such a weird thing. They shot towards the end when he was sort of already used to who the character was.
Interesting.
That's smart.
Yeah, it sounds really smart.
And even speaking of John Hughes, and then we're getting the casting. Even this movie, it was like, they said he wrote it really fast and they were kind of working off the first draft, you know,
because
he just knew and he had the freedom. That's another thing that's, talk about Black Eyes on White movies, like even with the success, the freedom he was given was still a privilege. And since he wrote the screenplay in less than a week.
That's crazy.
Wow.
Worked for hours on end and would later shoot the film essentially on what was the first draft.
A great privilege, and he must have earned it with his previous work that the studio would be like,
16 Candles was a big hit, And he was making all these movies for, at the time, like very low budgets.
Yeah.
Smart.
Yeah.
Killer.
So let's get into casting, man. It's
cool. Let's do
it. Pretty fun one. It's a tough one because they're young, but you yeah. gotta find your strategy to get it.
Oh, I'm excited. Strategy makes me wonder what y'all went with. Well, was it, you want to start? Aaron, you want to start?
Go for it, Aaron.
Yeah, I'll start. So my strategy was I went to the TV show Bel-Air.
Uh-huh. Oh, that's smart.
Mm-hmm. And I picked a lot of people, like the younger people I picked from this show. And then I had a little fun with the older cast. So we'll start with Ferris. I went with Jabari Banks, who is basically the Fresh Prince in Bel-Air.
That makes sense.
I haven't watched much of the show yet, but I hear good things, and the bit I've seen, I've been like, yeah, I'm going to get into it soon. I'm just waiting to binge it. So when we have time to just like run through it, I will watch it, the whole thing in earnest. But Jabari Banks is my Ferris Bueller.
It's great. Come on.
So my strategy was, I'm tired of giving all these people jobs in my movies that I don't even know. Okay. So, My strategy.
What?
You're Ferris Bueller?
Yeah, I was like, how local did you keep it then?
I kept it pretty local, but not so local that I'm going to be in it. I'd love to. I mean, I should have. Why don't I just cast myself?
Yeah, why not? Pick a part.
So, you know, Brandon said that Alan Ruck was, 28, 29?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not too worried about age, okay? Mm-hmm. So for my Ferris Bueller, I was just thinking about Essence, and I want to cast Lamar Woods to be my Ferris Bueller.
A homie Lamar.
Shout out to Lamar. Love him. Hilarious. Uh-huh.
Also writes on Grand Crew with me.
That's right.
Very talented, creative, super talented.
That's fun. I can picture him speaking to camera.
Uh-huh.
With his hands.
It is funny to picture him in high school. He's quite a bit older than high school, but yeah.
Shave the beard and he'll be fine.
My big twist was I switched the genders up. So my Ferris is a woman.
Ooh.
And I cast, we've cast her in a bunch of things, but Mersai Martin as my Ferris Bueller.
Yeah, it makes total
She's
sense.
She's got that like,
this actually could super really be,
charisma. Yeah.
Yeah. I like that.
That works.
And so I make, as you get to it, my Cameron's also a woman and my Sloan is a boy.
All right, let's do the Cameron, and then we'll do the girlfriend, then the sister, then we'll do the adult. So my Cameron, going back to Bel-Air, I like the Carlton guy, but I also like this guy that plays Will's friend, Jazz. So I'm going with Jordan L. Jones.
Cool.
To be Cameron.
I gotta check out this new
one. Yeah, we gotta check him out, but that's the name, and it'll make sense when we all get through the show.
Oh, yeah. I like that.
Amon, your Cameron?
My Cameron, again, going with people I know, not really caring about ages, just about essence. My Cameron is starting in that kind of like moody place is going to be Jaquez Neal. Mm. He's a great actor.
He's funny. Jaquez is funny.
Funny, hilarious. He could do the whole breakdown, getting... You know, dad's gonna hit me thing. I think Chucky's got it.
All right.
This is a big star for the role of Cameron, and I almost cast her as Ferris, but I put Zendaya. Ooh. Like almost Zendaya in Euphoria. Sort of like I can picture her. I think she's a really good actor. And like the parts where she's super depressed and is like, I don't want to do this.
Even Spider-Man Zendaya.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's like kind of like just a different kind of character, maybe than you think from her pictures. She would be funny. And she's taller. Cameron was taller than Ferris.
Yeah, she's tall. Yeah.
She has a stature, comedy. I like it. Love it. Marseille and Zendaya. Bro, this is $100 million.
That's it. Get the budget.
A beautiful movie.
Put them on a suit.
Let's get it going.
You haven't heard my Sloan. Yeah.
Oh my God. Sloan is the girlfriend?
Yep.
Let's boyfriend do it.
My version, yeah.
My Sloan is Coco Jones, who plays Hillary Banks in the show. She's been in a bunch of stuff. She was on Radio Disney's Next Big Thing. She was like a Disney. She's like a Disney Channel, you know, person. But she's also been in, what is something I seen her in that was really, man, she's just been around. She's young, but she has a lot of credits. Good Luck Charlie. I think that was a Disney show. Coco Jones.
Cool.
Is who I pick.
Great.
Who you got?
For mine, I'm getting Kirby Howell Baptiste.
Nice.
Yeah.
She's great.
Amazing. Kirby is amazing.
Yeah. And we're going to beef up the role. We're going to rewrite it.
We're going to give her some more to do. Okay, great.
Definitely.
I got Jaden Smith is the boyfriend.
Bro.
Oh.
We're going to
break. Like a
this movie will face. Make more than Avatar.
Yeah.
Marcella, Zendaya, and Jaden.
Or exec.
Oh my God.
The highest grossing movie of all time.
That movie is a go.
Yes, you can picture the poster.
The sister, played by Jennifer Grey, Jeannie Bueller.
Mm-hmm.
Jeannie, mm-hmm. Shayna, in quotes. Her nickname was Shana? Shayna?
Yeah, that's what she says to Charlie Sheen is like what she likes to be called. He calls her Jeannie anyway. He's like, yeah, I'm going to call you your real name.
Families that's are right. so funny. And I don't, this isn't just cultural, but I know a lot of families like this, but white families do it too. When people have second names.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's nicknames. Sometimes it's just like, well, this is Robert, but we call him Steve.
Right. You know, right. Because like, right. his uncle's Robert. Yeah.
Just what happened? What right. is going on? Anyway,
yeah.
Anyway, it's just hilarious to me. And but anyway. Who are we casting as the sister?
Yeah, I do love that. I remember people that would go by their middle name. And I'd be like, dang. And the middle name was always cool. It's like Phoenix.
Well, that's funny. The person I casted his name is Phoenix.
I'll go
first. Oh, okay.
Wait,
oh,
I'll okay. go first. I'll go first.
Yeah
you sister, go. You go.
Simone Joy Jones. Simone Joy Jones. Also from Bel Air. Yeah, look her up. She plays Lisa, Will's girlfriend, I think. So,
cool, nice.
Amon, what you got?
So I cast again. One of the close circle. Keep the money close. I cast Ego Wodum.
Wow,
I think
SNL
she could.
SNL legend, yeah.
SNL legend, Ego Wodum. She could totally play that pissed off like.
Amon's version is a hit in the UCB circuits.
Oh,
maybe
yeah.
there's a couple festivals. You
could, this could be a UCB stage show.
Yeah.
In like 2014.
Yeah, we could put this up. Yeah.
Yeah, back in the day. That's so true. That's so true.
All right. Who is Phoenix?
Yeah. So this is the big unknown in my cast, but I was trying to, because Matthew Broderick and Alan Ruck were Broadway stars, I was trying to see people in Broadway plays. So there's this actress, her name is Phoenix Best. She was in Dear Evan Hansen. She plays one of Evan Hansen's friends. And I just saw a picture in that cast, Phoenix Best. And I was like, oh yeah, never seen her act. So I'm going off her look in that particular.
What an amazing name.
That's a great Best. Name. Great name.
Goodness. Okay. Now we'll do, let's do Rooney. The principal.
Yeah.
Oh, wait. We should take we'll take a short break. I'll delete this. Brandon went to the restroom.
Oh, yeah. I'll do his thing. I couldn't help but watch this and think of all the BET versions of this movie. Where it was like, he took a day off, then a cop took him to prison because they mistook him for another person. And
right. The black kid, you couldn't just take a day off because... Somebody's going to see you and say, shouldn't you be at school? And then that's going to be...
Mm-hmm.
Rooney doesn't go in a black movie, Rooney doesn't go and search for the kid. He sends a truancy officer.
Yeah, he does. And the truancy officer can't wait to put his foot in someone's ass. And like,
the truancy officer is like Tommy Lee Jones and The Fugitive. Capable, smart. You know what I mean? Not goofy like Rooney. He's like,
uh-huh.
Where would I go if I was a kid?
Yeah. And
Von Steuben Parade, and he's there. You know what I mean?
He's there. And then meanwhile, you know, the brother of the main character, Ferris, was involved in some gang stuff. So that opposite gang sees him and now they're after him.
Yeah.
And it's like, man, this is not a day off. This is a stressful day off.
So stressful.
Yeah.
But for my Rooney, so I'll do two things. If I was casting this like Amon is, this is the role I would play. The principal. Nice.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Like
these kids. But when I cast, I went back a little bit. Orlando Jones.
Love Orlando Jones.
Orlando Jones.
Underutilized, man. I think he's really talented. So I cast him in this.
Yes.
He'd be funny, you know, different take. Let's see what he brings to the table. Orlando Jones, Mad TV, from 7-Up commercials, from Drumline.
From I remember from 7-Up
American Gods. There. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Talented.
Incredible. Incredible. For my Rooney... Mind you, now, Aaron, now that I know you're an actor, I would have definitely cast you, but you're number two if Colton Dunn passes. So try to get Colton in there.
Colton is so funny, bro.
Colton is so funny. Colton would be great, yeah.
Man, this is the biggest thing UCB, the improv community has seen since Del Close.
yeah, truly.
Who's in this movie?
It's really funny in your version, though, Amon, the age difference between the actors playing the teenagers and the actor playing the school administrators, like 5 years, 6 years, maybe 8 years.
Yeah. It's barely a generational difference.
Truly.
If it is, even, it might not even be.
Yeah. My Mr. Rooney, so again, switching up genders, I've got Leslie Jones. Playing.
Ooh, love it. Love it.
Her aggression would be so funny.
Yeah, having to deal with dogs. Yeah. Whatever happened to that? That's the best trope from those comedies.
So whenever mean old dog.
Scary dog.
The mean old dog who's always placated with like just a simple piece of meat or old shoe.
Right. Yeah.
100%. You throw a ball and they run down the street after the ball, you know.
This is what I needed. Well, right. This one they had to drug the dog.
Yeah, he did. This was one of the better attack dogs in movie history.
This is one of those ones where apparently it was actually very dangerous. And the period of time where the dog had to be like chasing him, where the dog's trainer was like just off camera, was like dangerous. It was like getting a little close.
This was just a local Chicago guy. Like, I got a dog.
I got a dog.
Yeah.
He's really scary looking.
Yeah.
He'll sit for sure, but nothing else. Are you certified, sir? Huh?
I got my driver's license.
You're right.
Yeah. He's good with people. Yeah, if I'm forklift certified.
Forklift certification. Here's my dog. Get him. Oh my God, this dog. We don't have the budget. And then let's do the assistant. This is the last one I did, but I'm open to more if you guys did more.
Secretary, this is the last one I did too.
The secretary, yeah.
I did this one in Charlie Sheen, but yeah, let's do it.
Oh, I should have done Charlie Sheen. That's a good one to cast, yeah. I'll make up something. For the assistant, I went with Yvette Nicole Brown. That's her name, right?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, from like Community and really a bunch of stuff. She's a vet in the industry. Really funny, I always thought. And just a great energy.
Yeah.
She brings a great energy to projects, you know. That 70s show, she's been in The Office, Boston Legal, Soul Man, Community, she was a regular on, The Mayor. I mean, she's just a long list of credits, and she's always...
Mm-hmm. She's great. Like Hollywood royalty, too, right? Isn't her mom also an actor?
What?
Is she?
I think so.
I know she used to be a singer. I listened to this podcast where she was... Like signed by, what's his face from Belle Biv DeVoe?
Michael Bivins.
Michael Bivins. Yeah.
Wow. She's from Ohio. Shout out. East Cleveland. University of Akron. Wow. What a journey. What a star. Yvette Nicole Brown. Who you got for the secretary? Amon.
Okay. Keeping it close to home, playing the secretary role, I have Charity Miller. Y'all remember Charity? She also worked as like a front desk person at one of the UCBs.
Oh yeah, I do know Charity. Yeah.
Yeah. Hilarious person. Given that attitude against Colton, that'd just be the fun sparks flying there.
switching gender again, I got Sam Richardson as the secretary.
Oh yeah,
as the secretary doing the sleep. Yeah. And really funny, like for me to picture Leslie Jones like getting mad at him.
Yeah. Oh my God, Leslie Jones and Sam Richardson together.
It
would be a good pairing.
Yep. Good pairing. Oh yeah, that's peanut butter and Nutella right there. That's like perfect.
And you did Charlie Sheen.
I did do the Charlie Sheen character because it was such a memorable little moment.
No, that's smart. Yeah.
This is where you put yourself in a little cameo. But who you got?
Dang, why don't I cast myself? I got to believe in myself first.
When I think rough around the edges drug addict, I think of Mondo Dumont.
Me too. Me
Thank
too.
You. Thank you. I would not be able to stay up for 2 days in a row, but I could fake it. So I cast Ishmael.
Oh, nice.
You know, Ish from, Ish.
Ish, I was like, he kind of got a, you know, laid back.
Yeah.
Quiet intensity, you know?
Yeah. Quiet intensity, cool. Like, I could see him saying some, like, super cool shit to, who's my ego? That'd be great.
I'm going to go with, if we're going to do it off the top of my head. Oh, golly. Who would I pick? Brandon, you got anything?
No, I'm thinking about it. Honestly, the first thing, this is probably bad casting, but I was trying to think, is like, is there an athlete that I would cast in it? And he would probably look too. First one I thought of is, I think it'd be funny. I don't know if he's an actor, but Trey Young from The Hoffs. Yeah.
That would be, he definitely, oh my goodness, that's hilarious. Trey Young.
That's cool.
I'll go with, I'm trying to think if there's like a rapper,
mm-hmm.
you know, mm-hmm. or,
yeah,
somebody.
There's some good rappers, young rappers.
I'll go with, I'm looking at a list of like young black comedians. I'll go with Jermaine Fowler.
Oh, nice.
He had a show, Superior Donuts on CBS. He was in Sorry to Bother You.
Mm-hmm.
I like Jermaine. He's funny. His stand-up is funny. Really funny. So I'll go Jermaine Fowler.
Nice.
Yeah. And we'll leave it at that.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've been watching this. My last note maybe about this movie. I've been watching this Tom Brady docuseries, The Man mm-hmm. in the Arena. Tom Brady definitely gives off Ferris Bueller vibes.
Mm-hmm.
Where I don't know if there's more to his thought pattern or something, but in the show, the way he talks about his past, it's everything is very gee golly, very on the surface of like, and then we lost the game, and then I thought, well, heck, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
We won and I felt good about that. And it's like very like not a care in the world, just like going about my business, and what's on the surface, that's what it is. And
right,
that's like the best case future for Ferris Bueller. It's like, maybe he's not a football player, but he's like a CEO. And he's like, well, we just put the money in the market and it tripled. Who knew? You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. There is a type of success, I think, that in sports for sure. And acting, I think a lot of times it requires like a lack of self-consciousness.
Yeah.
Like I think sometimes with like certain athletes, I think they're too cerebral to be a great athlete, that they're not instinctual enough, that they overthink things a little bit. And there's certain great athletes that I think can shut that off and are not, they don't have any of that like outside their head,
that noise,
overthinking kind of things. They're just like trust themselves. And I think, I was just saying something like that about Tom Cruise. Tom Cruise is like that. He's like the most present person.
Right.
He's like probably crazy, but he's like a great actor because it's all instinct.
Yeah. Block out that tunnel vision. Ferris Bueller, super white movie. We didn't really have to, we definitely talked about the privilege, but it's like, it just is. It was for white people, but enjoyable by other people.
Totally.
It was definitely for like upper middle class white. And this is what it presented. And I think this is the target audience. But John Hughes was just in his bag and made a movie that I think a lot of people could watch and enjoy. Mm-hmm. And it kind of just wins you over.
Mm-hmm.
It lulls you into enjoyment.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like a fun, the whole thing is like a fun montage with like music. It's a good time.
Yeah, it's a nice combination of the escapism of Ferris and the emotional stuff with Cameron.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So that's Ferris Bueller. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next week.